Episode number 180 with Clayton Fletcher. Again. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
This is Mike Snyderman.
And this week we are bringing back Clayton Fletcher. We're going to do some WSOP hands. I'm pretty excited, Mike. This is going to be like an all strategy podcast.
Oh, yes.
I could barely sleep last night.
I was going to watch some paint dry, but you gave me this other option, and I flipped a coin.
And it landed on strat.
Yes.
How have you been the last week?
Pretty good. Nothing much going on. Up a little bit at cash this week.
Nice.
I don't know what else is. Steve, do you think we have a listener out there who actually thinks this show is scripted? Probably not. I think they're smart enough to realize that we just get on here.
Just completely shoot to shit. No idea.
Steve, we haven't talked crypto in a while. I mean, we talked about my Coinbase account, but the actual price of the stuff and where's it going, and I've gotten absolutely. I mean, I think you got the same breakdown. You got a lot of this altcoin shit. That stuff has just gotten murdered.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Bitcoin from its high right now is probably down. I don't know, 60-65% or something. But these altcoins, most of them are 90%. And I mean, just in the last 2 months, this is even before I've lost it, like basically they've gone down 40% compared to Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin's gone down 25% and the rest of these have gone down like 60% or something like that. So it's just, I haven't looked at the numbers, but I basically have lost altogether with this. Rather, if I had pure Bitcoin, I would have like 5 Bitcoin more, probably.
Yeah. At least.
I've lost 2 Bitcoin in the last since mid-April. That much I know, in terms of the overall portfolio value. And from the very beginning, I mean, there's still a chance one of these have a breakthrough. I don't know. Basically, I'm just looking for one little explosion of this. And then other than maybe Neo and maybe Monero, I have about 7 or 8 other ones that I'm just desperate to dump, but at this point I'm ready. Going to let them go to nothing before I sell them, I think.
That's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, I just have, and they're just worth so little compared to what I bought them with. I'm like, is it really even? You know, should I even pull out the 1500 that I've got in there right now and just say, fuck it, or just let it ride? I guess I think I just got to let it ride. I don't know.
Well, if it does have any sort of big, you know, there, of course, there is the magical 6 weeks we always talk about where all these altcoins just exploded. December, yeah. January. It's probably never it will duplicate, I'm thinking. But if for some reason they do have a month where, like, you know, let's say Bitcoin gets to 13, 14,000 and then kind of holds, but all the alts surge.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try to sell all the alts, though, and stick with Bitcoin. Yeah. I'm just waiting for that one run where – they have a big surge, and then I already have sell orders on them, but my sell orders are so unreasonable. They require such a massive increase, so I should go on and change those. But those things are just shit. I mean, you never know. You never know. One of these you could hit a home run with, but it'll probably be a new project. A lot of these are probably – I don't even know what they are. They're probably old. I mean, everyone says that Zcash and Monero will always be around. But it doesn't mean that they won't have a lot of competition and they'll be like gaining value. They just might be around.
Yeah.
People who use them, but it's not going to become, you know, challenge a Bitcoin or anything. So I don't know specifically. The Bitcoin Cash is the one that I'm really worried about. I think I joked about it. There's just some guy at the fucking casino is like, Bitcoin Cash is going to overtake Bitcoin by the end of the year. It's going to be 7,000 by the end of the summer. So I immediately got a bunch of those at $1,600 and they're like 700 now. I got rid of like a lot of Ethereum, but Ethereum has gone down pretty much the same as Bitcoin Cash. So
yeah,
I don't know, but as long as it goes up, whatever.
I was listening to a podcast, Joe Rogan, and he had a guy on there, like an economist, and he was basically saying that it looks like the economy, he said it's overdue for a recession. He said typical yep. recessions are every 5 to 7 years, and he said we're coming up on 9, and he's like, it's time. And so that really got me thinking, like, because in the last few years, I've been buying a lot of stocks and I've been, into the crypto world. And how valuable is cryptocurrency going to be when that recession hits? I can't imagine that it would go up.
I've heard that that's going to be the, that actually recession helps crypto, but you got so many like crypto lovers out there. I don't know what to fucking think, but
yeah.
Huh. Yeah. That's my, if it starts going up here, that, you know, what's my exit price at which I start taking it all out.
Yeah.
Originally, like in my mind, it's like, well, I'll sell one at 30,000 and see yes. where it goes from there.
I'll sell half of a Bitcoin here at 50K and then just go from there. Oh, I it looks like we're all wrapped up with the 6-4 spades. I got got a hold of almost everybody that had money on there, and I want to thank you guys. Most of you guys just rolled the rake back over into the scholarship. That was really cool. Anyone that had a I was able to shoot the money over on PayPal, and I'm just waiting on a couple more guys to get back to me. But yeah,
what do you mean? What do you mean that they've all got their money off the site? Or they've all just said they've all communicated with you via the rake back and said, thanks for the info, Steve. Thanks for the heads up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They've communicated back saying, you know, thanks for the heads up. I appreciate it. I'll pull my money off and you can keep the rake back or send the rake back here to PayPal.
But how about it was one player who contacted you who said they couldn't get their money off. Did that person get their money? Do you know?
He and I both got a FedEx with a tracking number, which I admit I haven't typed in to see where it's physically located, but he sent me a picture of it, so I'm pretty sure it's on the way. And Jason should be getting his check right around the same time that I'm getting mine. And then I contacted another guy that had a fair amount on there, and he's going to start withdrawing it too. So,
okay. Well, let us know when those guys get their money, because that's the key.
Yes.
Thing here.
Yeah.
Well, for all we know, it'll be a great site, and poker will be legalized, and this will, you know, be a. But for the time being,
yeah, it.
You and I had a little bit, as usual, different emotional response to this. You were just
yes.
You were just like, oh, having problems again.
Yes, you put them on blast. It was.
Well, I mean, Steve, I think that's the way you got to go with these poker sites. I really do. As soon as from out of the starting gate, that should be goal number one. Somebody needs money. You've got enough to get it off, and you've got a way to get it off.
Yeah, yeah. I've been looking at other poker sites that we could go to. Do you remember Steve Wan? He was he was at Alex's house. And Mike's house over the summer for the last couple of years, Asian guy.
Yeah.
You remember him? Okay. He's got a site. He runs it off of PP Poker. And I talked to him, and he said he'll throw us a 3K credit that if we want to gamble on there, we can. Thing is, there's not too many players. He said he's got less than 100 players, but what they do is they all say, okay, we're going to play Monday night at this time, and then they go on there. I would rather get something that's a little bit of a bigger site, but what I really like is that I know the guy, and he can show me how all the metrics work and all that stuff, so there's, you know, good communication with the owner. And,
maybe this should be your next project, Steve. I was actually thinking about that the other day with the Amazon. I'm like, you know, what's Steve's next little business venture going to be? Amazon, you know, he didn't take long for you to turn that into something very profitable. You just kind of, well, you got bored with it, and it was just too much of your time.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a future Barton project.
You know, you're like the fourth person to mention that in the last 5 days. I don't know. I'm not against it. I don't know. It's possible.
Right. Well, that'll be something. You need. I'm guessing you need a lot of money. You can reach out to the big dog with PP Poker. I mean, so PP Poker, is that the name of his spot, his site?
Steve's is PP Poker. I think Big Dog's is PPI.
Okay, but you said it was connected to something else, so it's an affiliate. It's like an affiliate of some other site, right?
Well, what he's doing, I guess there's several different poker platforms that you can play online, and one of them is PP Poker, and his group of players, there are a bunch of the ones from guys that he plays with out in San Francisco, and then I was talking to him about bringing us on, and he said what he could do is he could set up like a tournament. Like he said, okay, if you guys want to play, you know, a $30 tournament on Wednesday night, just let me know and we'll set it up and then you guys can all play there. So I think that would be fun because, you know, we'd get to play with the other listeners, but I don't know that we'd have the volume of people.
Well, if you want to learn about something, if you want to get in from the beginning, Steve, you got to get a sense about how to build a bit, this would be a good way for you to get a glimpse of the business plan. That's about true. How they plan on, and, you know, for people who are doing this just mainly for fun.
Yeah.
You know, some people aren't really looking to maybe have a big field or big guarantee. They just want to play some cards. So.
Yeah.
But okay. I don't know. Maybe you should stay away from online poker entirely until it's legal in the U.S.
Then I'm going to sit here and die in this room until that happens.
Well, I mean, you can play, but in terms of encouraging others to play at a site, becoming in a before advertising a spot is what I mean, you know, because of the discomfiture of your experience with 6-4 spades.
Yeah, I'm not going to let that one leave a bad taste in my mouth. I think it lessons for me learned there were know the owners and have good communication there, but. It, I don't know. If you guys know of any other poker site that's out there that maybe you're playing on now or you've heard of, shoot me an email, headsuppoker.poker, and click on the submit a hand and shoot it over to me. And let me know what you think, and I'll contact the guys, and we can go from there. But I am actively looking for another site to play on, so if you guys know of any of them, shoot me an email.
What do you got going on the women front, Steve? I think I talked to you the other day, and you're like, "Hey, I got a date." Usually, I'm the one cutting these conversations short.
Let's see. I haven't been dating a whole lot. I am. I'm trying to force myself back into the market, you know. And I am going to the beach today to meet a friend. So we'll see if see what goes from there. I think we'll probably have a little picnic on the beach or something. And we'll see.
Right. I gotcha.
We'll see. It seems like a nice girl. And yeah.
Where'd you meet her? Is this online?
No, I met her at a friend's house at a barbecue. And she's a, yeah, just seems like a sweet girl. So we'll see. We shall see.
Sweet means you're not going to try to bang her until the second date, Steve. That's very, you're very traditional. I like that.
A gentleman never tells. Well, should we bring Clayton on?
Sure.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break and more Clayton Fletcher. Want to grow your bankroll so you can play the games you should be playing? Before your next session, enjoy 10 minutes of listening to a relaxing meditation tape of the type of game you're about to play. It will give you an edge over your opponents who have not done so, and watch your bankroll grow. Elliot Rowe has all the MP3s, cash, tournaments, live, online. I have them all because I believe in them and I know they work. This is The Next Step in Poker, The Mindset Advantage by Elliot Rowe. Click on the link in the show notes. It'll take you straight there. Use the code HUPOKER and score yourself a discount. Elliot Rowe, Mindset Advantage. Clayton Fletcher, thank you for coming on the show again.
Hey, thanks for having me back. It's good to be back. Always love talking to you guys.
It's been a whole 6 days. How have you been since then?
Just basking in the glory of my newfound fame. It's no, nothing like that. I still take out my own trash. Nothing's changed.
That hasn't changed. You still have to drive yourself places.
Yeah. Well, I live in New York. I don't even have a car.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You still have to catch your own cab.
That's right. That's right. No special treatment.
Yes. Right on. Right on. Well, I got to say, I've been excited as a little schoolgirl about just talking WSOP heads with you for an hour. So this is you've got a heart out, right, at 12:30?
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't talk all day because, you know, my busy schedule now that I'm famous, I have 12 other podcasts to be on today.
Bunch of other schoolgirls tittering about.
Yeah. But you guys will always be my favorite schoolgirls, and I mean that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's enough to make a girl blush.
I just actually Googled schoolgirls Clayton Fletcher, and look, is this a mugshot I'm looking at? What is
fake news. Fake news.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Right on. Well, should we get into it? What hands you got, Clayton?
Yeah. So, as I mentioned on the previous episode, I took every opportunity I could to speak into my voice recorder during all my breaks when I didn't have other obligations.
Yeah.
And I basically recorded lots and lots of hands throughout all the days. I thought maybe we could go through a little bit, starting with day one. I'm going to make an effort to not repeat any hands that I might have mentioned on other podcasts.
Okay.
So there's somebody listening to another podcast where I was a guest and they heard me talk about a certain hand. I don't want to repeat those hands. So I found some that I haven't talked about yet that I thought might be interesting for your listeners. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
For those who didn't who didn't listen to last time, I remember you saying you weren't happy how you played on day one. So well, I'd be curious if any of these hands are part of that. But I'll let you jump right in.
Yeah, absolutely. Day one, I didn't get enough sleep. I had changed my schedule, thinking that I was going to be asked to do commentary for the Poker Central Twitch channel. Which was supposedly going to be broadcasting another final table, and they had asked me to do commentary, which is something I really, really have tremendous interest in doing. So I jumped at the opportunity to do that and therefore changed my day one. Long story short, that meant that I ended up playing day one with less than the ideal amount of sleep. And I adjusted my strategy. Normally, I play a lot of hands. Like, my average VPIP in the main event is probably something of like, I don't know, maybe like 35%.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I find that it's usually profitable to get heavily involved in a lot of hands early in the main event because there are a lot of players that are just kind of freaked out by the whole experience, maybe playing a little too tight. And it's just good to get in against the players that are trying not to lose. But on this particular day, when I altered that normal strategy and normal playing style, even going so far as to – I probably played the tightest on day one that I've ever played. And I've played the main event probably 9 or 10 times. So this was – I was on lockdown. I was like, you know, I didn't sleep well. I'm just going to try to, you know, be cool and not get involved. I'm not going to try any 3-barrel bluffs, nothing crazy. So
was there at least a couple of pros on your table that you thought were good, maybe on your left, that you're like, okay, let's
no, not get too active? No, that really? Was the hardest okay. part. I had a good table. Like, I had the kind of table I could normally run over, but I just stuck to my game plan. I said, you know, I'm not thinking clearly enough to make really hard poker decisions today. Today, the goal is basically to survive.
Yeah.
And so even though I saw some opportunities where, you know, normal Clayton would probably have made a few plays. Sleepy Clayton was like, I'm just going to stay out of this and try not to screw it up. You know, just
I'll take a nap here. Nudge me when it's my turn.
Yeah, nudge me when I have a good hand and then I'll play.
You know, the Seinfeld episode where George actually builds a little bed under his desk?
Yeah.
You ever see that one?
Yeah, I thought about doing that at the table there. They wouldn't let me. It was weird. My
You brought your tent and camping equipment and everything. They wouldn't even let you set it up.
Well, it was interfering with the Shuffle Master, so nobody wants that.
Sure. Yeah, that's right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I definitely wasn't happy with my day one play. One example at hand I want to kind of just talk through quickly. I had like 68,000. You start with 50,000. So, you know, things were going fine. The blinds were 150, 300 with 50 ante. So that's a big ante.
Yeah.
A bunch of people limped and I raised really big. I raised to 1,800 on the button with the ace king of hearts. So I was totally fine taking it down. I think there were four limpers in total.
Okay.
And I would have been more than happy just to take down all those limps, the blinds and the antes, and not even ever see a flop with my ace king of hearts. And that was kind of the playing style that I was basically employing. I was trying not to have any hard decisions on a day when I know I hadn't gotten enough sleep the night before.
Yeah.
So I got two callers, and the flop came king 7-6. Everybody's really deep. You know, it's day one.
Sure.
You know, effective stack is like 58,000, something like that. King 7-6 rainbow with one heart. Okay. So I have top pair, top kicker, and backdoor flush draw, for what it's worth. And they all check to me.
Okay.
So
what do we got in the pot here? It's
well, it's 1,800 times three plus the blinds and antes. So
about 60, 65.
Yeah. We want to get through as many hands as possible. We don't have to count every chip unless unless it's an actual math decision whether to call or, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, this one, you know, I don't think it's that big an issue yet because we're so deep. So I bet 3,500 after two checks.
Okay.
And the first guy folded. And the second guy, who's a player on my immediate right, who I mentioned on the previous episode, the guy with the thick Bostonian accent, older guy that had been kind of mad at me.
Right.
saying that I was bullying him and stuff.
You had the set of aces against him, right?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a day two or day three hand. I guess it was day one. Okay.
Yeah, it was day one. So he... yeah, if I'm not mistaken, this is all from day one. So he check raised it to I think 9,000. So now we just, I mean, the decision is really right now here on the flop. Like, is ace king ever good against a player like this? And I think the answer is sometimes ace king is good because he's decided to take his stand now against me.
Yeah. Was this after the aces hand or before? Do you remember?
Before, probably.
Yeah, I think this was before.
Okay.
I'm not in love with your bet sizing. First of all, you bet 60% pot. I don't know. I don't know if that quickly. If you do get check raised, it makes it. Plus, you got him killed so often here. I mean, you're kind of hoping to get called by a worse pair. Maybe. I mean, like I said, you're happy to take it down. But anyway, I'd be betting like 40% pot. I'd be betting like 2,400, 2,600 maybe.
I was thinking 3K is the highest. But I kind of like a little bit of a smaller
bet. But again, this is a guy, if they've already got the dynamic too, where this guy obviously has some real resentment because he's feeling pushed around, then he's... yeah, maybe bigger. But I was going to say bet smaller or sometimes check back here. I know discussing I know discussing people that like they're always betting aces here because he could have a king. But because you're blocking the kings, he's weak. It's never a three street hand. So why not check here? Maybe, I don't know. Some people like to front load the value, but betting's fine. So he check raises.
Yeah. By the way, I disagree about value betting small. Okay. I think particularly when you're in the main event and your opponent has it in for you, I think it's wise to go ahead and bet big and get value. I think in this case, I could get value from any seven, any six, any pocket eights, pocket nines. And I think that this particular player would limp in and then just call the raise with pocket nines, maybe even pocket tens. You would play this way.
Really?
And I think, okay. I think that one adjustment that I generally make against weak opponents is that my value bets are much bigger than they are against more talented opponents. And my bluffs are much smaller because they're basically just going to fold if they don't have anything, no matter what I bet.
Right.
So, you know, I'm trying to get value from my hand. Of course, I was not thrilled with getting check raised.
Right.
But yeah, I don't necessarily think there's any problem with my sizing. Except now that I got check raised, now we're starting to think, well, how deep do I want to get with this hand? If I didn't have the dynamic with him, I could probably just fold it. Also, if I'm going to be perfectly honest, if I get enough sleep the night before, I could probably just, you know, fold my hand. You know, I'm at a good table. I don't need to like play a huge pot with one pair. I'd be folding the best hand a lot, but I think that's okay in the main event. This isn't necessarily the hand that I want to get broke with. If I didn't have the backdoor hearts, it's an easier fold. You know, I could pick up a draw on the turn. So that's all of that kind of enters into the dynamic here. So
this just feels like every time we call this, then the turn is like a three and the guy just bets pot and we fold and we're like, why didn't we just fold the flop? You know,
Does he have any bluffs here?
Yeah. Is he raising here with 8-9?
Yeah, this hand I remember now is actually after the pocket aces hand that we talked about before. So I do feel like this guy kind of wants to get back at me. Like we have that dynamic of rivalry.
I couldn't fold it if it was after that hand then.
Yeah.
A lot of people with sixes and sevens here, I'm sure this is what got into your thinking too. They're just going to flat when there's no flush draw out there.
Yeah, it's a rainbow flop.
They're not always going to be check raising. And like you said, he had it out for you.
Yeah.
I could see him check raising here with worse kings.
Yeah, I definitely think if he limped in with like king jack, king 10, and now he's check raising to see where I'm at, see where he's at, or just to try to take it down against.
He could be overvaluing his hands. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And he does want to get involved with me. He wants to kind of get even. So all of that.
With the backdoor flush, especially his sizing is pretty small too. A lot of pros anyways are probably going to check raise at least 3x there.
Yeah.
3.5, 4x maybe. With their bluffs and with their value.
Absolutely.
Although he doesn't have to make it real big to set it up for the river shove. I'm pretty sticky in these spots. Maybe folding is the best option, but I'm probably going to call at least once and see what happens on the turn.
Yeah, and that's what I decided to do, which I don't know if it's the best play or not. I think folding the best hand here is okay, just because of my situation I'm in. There's only one really good player at my table, and he's also on my right. To the right of this guy, whose name is Bobby, by the way, is Adam Levy, Ruthless, who I ended up playing with at three different tables in this tournament. And he's an excellent player, but he doesn't really go too crazy on day one. He kind of has the typical professional mentality of, let's just survive and try to build our stack with low risk. So that seems to be his
The villain in his hand, have you seen him had a nutty hand and how he played it? As he check raised, I mean, we know we have the psychological profile, but in terms of hand scene, was there anything that led you to believe that he's could be bluffing here?
No, the only things that really made me think he could be bluffing was that he's just sick of me,
right?
And
I got you.
He decided to go for it here. Yeah, there hasn't been another like check raise bluff,
okay,
or whatever.
So you
that
called.
I've seen. Yeah, I called in position, heads up. We'll see a turn, and it's the jack of hearts giving me a flush draw. Mm-hmm. To go with my top pair, top kicker.
Okay.
So now the board is king, 7-6, jack with two hearts. And now he bets 15,000 into the...
Should be 24K.
4,000-ish pot. And, well, you know, do we want to continue or what's going on?
His stack size, you said, was what to start the hand?
58 effective.
Yeah. 58. Yeah, he's got 58, yeah.
That's quite pricey.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, one consideration is if I make the nut flush on the river, I could almost definitely get the rest of his stack when he does have 7-6 or 6-6 or 7-7.
And he's not going to ever put you on a flush probably because it'd be
no.
Run or
no.
So.
Yeah, so that's why
if he's got a set, he's got to pay you off.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn, so if I call, one. I have the full stack of implied odds, and the reason why it's a tough one is because we didn't fold on the flop. So if I really had the game plan to try to make my decisions easy, I should have just, you know, given in to the resistance. But the dynamics between this player and me, and the fact that I had some backdoor flush cards and other things that could go my way, I was unable to make the fold, even though I had a certain game plan heading into the deck. This was
one
just
of those
spot.
you're crossing your fingers, hoping you didn't pick up a flush draw so you could fold it.
Yeah, I almost didn't want to see a heart on a turn. Exactly. Yeah. So here we are. What do we do?
I'm adding it up here. We got 39K in the pot now after his 15K bet, and he has 32 behind. So he's, man.
Yeah, with the implied odds, I think it's a call, but it's just more a question of when you're playing the main event, do you need to take spots like this? At this point, I'm pretty sure I'm beat. I think he might check raise the flop with something, but when I call, he's not going to fire again, especially a healthy bet like this one. It's just it's not in his player profile to just like keep bluffing.
Yeah, to just fire again with pocket fives here or something.
Even King Jack, or well, King Jack of course now has two pair. He would bet that one again, but if he had some other king, and he never has like top and middle like King Seven or something like that's not really. He never has that. He doesn't limp and then call the big raise with those hands, like even against me. No,
he's probably he's probably knows what you have at this point. He's got you on aces or ace king.
Yeah, I mean, I think my hand's pretty easy to read even for.
So it just looks like a one pair hand to me. Yeah,
it's very hard for him to put me on hearts though. That's the deceptive part of my hand. Like if I can get there on the river.
Well, if you want to say, I'm sorry, after, let's see, he would still have, how much more does he have in his stack after he bets 15? Does he still has like 30 in his stack or a little 32. Less?
32, yeah.
32. So if you want to look at this way, that basically it's costing you 15 to win the 24 plus the 32. I'm sorry.
The 39 plus the
32. 24, 39 plus 32 to win 71.
Yeah.
So it'd be 15 divided by 86 would be the numbers you need. Does that sound about, it's actually a break even call almost, because if you have eight outs, let's just assume he has a set. So there's one of the hearts that does not help you because that would boat him up. Am I doing the math right? I think I am.
Here. Yeah, 17% is.
So if you're assuming you're stacking him every time that you hit a heart, if you saw his hand face up and there was a set and you were going to stack him every single time, it might be just barely plus chip EV. But then there's the whole, you know. It's a lot of chips in a tournament, which he has a big edge in. So,
right. So therefore, with all those things considered, I think I should fold here. But I called and the river bricked and he bet again and Tired Clayton called, which is terrible. And he showed a set of sixes. So that was a hand that hurt a lot. I ended up having about 26,000 after that hand was over.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm just trying to rush through a little bit because I have some other better hands I want to talk to you guys about.
Let's go to the next hand.
But that I think that hand demonstrates You know, how we can get too optimistic. Well, if I get the flush, I'm going to be able to stack this guy. How we can overvalue the importance of dynamics between ourselves and other players. When a player like this, no matter what the dynamic is, he's waiting for the nuts so that he can play a big pot with me. He's not bluffing me. Like, my ace king is probably close to never good on the flop check raise. So it's you know, I just, when you're tired and you make bad decisions, it can really cost you a lot of chips, even when you have a game plan to try to stay out of trouble. Yeah. So I feel like there's a lot of lessons in that hand that I learned, and hopefully maybe some other people can learn from my mistakes, because that was a bad, bad hand that I was kicking myself over for quite a while. The only other hand I want to discuss from day one, my stack was all the way down to 23,000, and I was in the big blind with the eight of hearts and the seven of spades. It folded all the way around to Ruthless, who raised it to 1,200. The blinds were 250 and 500 with the 75 ante. So he made it 1,200, which had been the standard raised at our table. He's got like 100,000 chips. He's just doing
his... What position is he in?
He's on the button.
Button, okay.
Yeah. So it folds all the way to him. He opens his button to 1,200. The small blind, the player from the previous hand, folded. And now it's up to me. Do I want to play a pot? I have to call 700 more to see a flop. I have 8-7, which is a playable hand. I have a really good opponent. I can't fold. Like, even on like Clayton on lockdown, I can't resist the pot odds, and I can't resist making a big hand with 8-7. So,
right,
maybe with my game plan, I'm supposed to fold, but I put in the 700 more.
Almost 4-1. Yeah, I'd probably flick a call here. 8-6 offsuit. I think I'm folding, but the connected. I don't know. I don't think I can fold.
Yeah, I have to fold. I mean, I had a game plan, but these are the kind of hands where I felt like I couldn't necessarily just wait for the nuts. Like, I couldn't resist the pot odds. And I have a playable hand. So the flop comes, 10 of clubs, 6 of diamonds, 4 of clubs. So I have 2 gut shots.
Double gutted, a 5 or 9.
And I'm first.
These ones I like to donk lead. This board hits your range more than it does his button raising range. I like to bet my little straight draws and my little flush draws. I like to just lead out. And so if I did my math right, it should be 3,300 in the pot. In spots like this, I would bet like 22. And then if you get a favorable turn, then fire like pot or overbet is my standard. So here I'd be betting pretty big, and I'd bet like 2K to 2,500, something like that.
Mike, you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's okay. I mean, I think you can do any, I think it'd be, if it was a 10-8-6 board and you had like 7-4, if you had a double gutter in a different way, maybe I like donking a little more because you got more two pair combinations in there, basically. Yeah. I might just, like I said, just because if your plan is just to get through the next day, you can check call. But if you got a donk lead, you got to definitely pretty much bet every turn, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing with it. If I'm a donk lead, I'm always, I don't know what Steve's theory is. I'm always ready. I'm always at least firing a second bullet, often a third, if it makes sense, depending on the run out.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the play. I want to tell you guys why.
Okay.
Because with 23,000 chips and at these blind levels, my M is 15, or you could say I have 46 big blinds. And I just feel like when you bet, especially if you bet in the sizing in the range that, you know, Steve suggested, I lead out for 22, and then Adam makes it like 65. You know, with two gut shots, I hate to have to fold, but I also hate to have to put in so much of my stack and just hope that a 5 or 9 peels off. I think for my stack size, it gets really awkward when you lead and get raised. And also, I think that Adam's perfectly capable of raising me with like something like the ace king with the ace of clubs, because there's two clubs on the flop. Like, he could easily raise a lot of leads.
The quality would, of the gonna have a... Or we could just call with nothing here and then just to click back the turn, you know, it just, yeah, the quality of the competition, this is like one of the best online players ever, really. He's
an outstanding player. I've played with him in a number of other tournaments over the years. And like, I've always been really kind of impressed with his skills. Like I think against a more predictable opponent, I think leading is better. I think with a bigger stack, leading is totally fine, even against Adam. But I think in this particular spot with this stack, I think leading's kind of a mistake because you're going to have to fold a lot when he raises or commit to this pot with eight high, which really sucks.
And yeah,
but you I also would, take it down.
I like check call quite
a bit. A lot of times he just folds. You know, that's where this kind of gets valuable. Is a lot of times they'll fold the turn when you pot it.
But, yeah, so you're saying like lead pretty big on the flop and then double barrel the turn. And now, like, we're really going off of our game plan. We're bluffing everybody out with eight high.
True.
When he has 100,000 and I only have 23,000. And I feel like at the end of the day, I think that's pretty bad. I think at the end of the day, it's much harder to bluff people, especially people that have already accumulated a nice stack. I don't think Adam Levy is afraid of my 23K when he's got 100K in front of him.
That's probably true.
And I think he might just see what I have as a draw. I think a lot of times players lead with their draws too much. Donk lead with their draws too much. And I think that he'll be able to correctly put me on the type of hand that I have. He might mistake it for like something like the ace five of clubs or something like that. But he's going to have a correct read that I have a draw. And he could put maximum pressure on me where I can't really put that much pressure on him. I don't even have a quarter of his stack to apply pressure with. So for all those reasons, I think checking and calling is a play.
And he's going to be checking back a lot of turns too. So you get two shots to hit your hand, you know.
Absolutely.
So, so you check.
Yeah, so I check, and he kind of tilted his head, like acting surprised that I had checked. And he and I have a fun dynamic. Like he likes to joke around a lot at the table. You know, he and I have been sort of having respectful fun with each other all day. But when he did that, even with the, you know, the jokey joke dynamic, I felt like he was really strong. I put him on like pocket kings when he did that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Just the way he acted, something about it. And I might've been wrong. It might just been a false tell, but in the moment, when he kind of like, oh, you check kind of, he didn't say that was his body
did
language.
He kind of like wrinkle his forehead and eyebrows a little bit, like, kind of inquisitively.
Yeah, he kind of raised his his eyebrows like, okay. Like surprised.
I know exactly the look you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then he bet 1500. I think that's small enough to call.
I think so.
I think that given the read, anything else is bad.
Yeah.
Raising when I think he has a really strong hand is stupid.
Yes.
And folding this draw when I think he has a really strong hand is also bad. So I just call and hope to hit my hand. The turn is the tray of hearts. I don't see any reason to lead here. I checked again. And this time he put in 4,000. So I know Steve's doing the math on this pot.
Yeah, we got 6,300 in the pot on the turn. We have about we'll call it 20K behind. I agree. I don't see any reason to lead here.
Yeah, but the question is, can we afford to call? I mean, like you say, it's a fairly healthy bet here. He's putting in 4,000.
Yeah, the problem is he could have shit here.
Yeah.
Which means even if he hits your hand, you don't get paid anything.
Right, but I do have the read, and I tend to really put a lot of value on my
reads.
Sure. I feel like that's the strength of my game. So I don't think he has nothing, although, of course, it's possible, especially a really good player like him could definitely fool me into thinking he has something when he doesn't. He's that good. Like, you know, I don't think a read against him is that reliable, but I do kind of just feel what I feel in the moment and go with it for better or worse.
I mean, we hit a five or a nine here, are we really going to get paid? I mean, that board would...
Well, do we have any other outs here where we could theoretically, like if the board pairs, the 10 or the 6, do we donk 70% pot? Do we have any other plan to win the pot on the river, or are we just hoping to hit?
Yeah,
if we're just hoping to hit, probably just fold here.
Yeah, that's good.
I think folding is fine. The reason I called was because my plan was to shove on a 5 or a 9 or any club, because I think that Adam has put me on a draw. And even if he has like pocket kings and I stick my whole stack in on a river club, he can't really determine whether I have the club draw or the double gutter that I have. And there aren't that many open enders that can afford to call the turn. It's hard to put me on the 8-7 double gutted. So if I called preflop with the 5-7 or the 5 tray, I'm open ended. Otherwise, I'm not. So actually, if I think about it, the 5-7 actually got there.
Yeah, 5-7 is 10-6
yeah.
4-3.
Yeah. So, you know, if he's more than likely putting me on any two clubs, maybe like 9-8 of clubs, ace 5 of clubs, like any club hand. So I feel like I have bluff outs, as I like to call them.
Okay, well, that was my question. Yeah. If the 5 hits, there's 4 to a straight on the table, so it's hard to get paid for that. But yeah. At that point, if he's got kings, he's got kings, and there's a lot of chips in the pot, too. And you're a guy, apparently, who he's played with, who he probably thinks of as a pro or as, you know, as a tough winning tournament player.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't think he thinks I'm the best, but I think he definitely has more respect for me than he does for most of our opponents at this table. So put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah. As for betting if the board pairs, I think that's a mistake because I don't think that I've represented a set or two pair at all the way I've played this hand.
So I don't think so.
All of a sudden betting really big just because the board pairs, I think he'll see right through that and call with kings or whatever he's got.
Okay.
I've mentioned that because the river is a 4 and not a club.
Okay.
So final board 10-6-4-3-4 with just two clubs. And I don't think that's one of my outs or my bluff outs. So I just check. He bet big. And I folded my 8 high, obviously.
You didn't call with that?
No. And I love this hand because he said, you know what, Clayton, it's the end of the day. We're almost done. And he turned over pocket 10. So he had flopped a set and rivered a full house. So I'm glad that I didn't change my plan and bet the paired board on the end because I would have gotten action from the full house.
Right.
Yeah, I doubt he's folding that.
Well, I said if a 10 or a 6 were to hit.
Right. Not a 4.
A 4 would not make any sense at all.
A 10 would have been a lot.
Unless you actually had quads.
Yeah, because I might actually play a 10 this way. You know, if I had like ace 10 or king 10,
right.
I might just check and call. You know, that is a hand. I could have a 10 if the 10 had paired. But yeah, it was nice to know that my read on the flop was actually confirmed because he was very strong on the flop.
Right.
He flopped nuts. So all of that was good because it showed that even tired Clayton can do something right occasionally.
But the bad Clayton pulled one out.
Yeah, but because of that hand, I ended the day with 16K, and needless to say, that stack was well below average heading into day 2.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then tired Clayton went and did some coke and stayed up all night again. Tired Clayton learned from his mistakes.
Well, the next day was 4th of July, and I slept in. So hard. It's like by the time I woke up, they were getting the fireworks ready.
Oh, wow.
So I definitely needed some sleep, and I'm glad I got it then. And then, as I mentioned, day 2 was one of the best days of my whole poker career. I started with 16,000 and ran it up. At one point, it was over 300,000. So that was a really fun day. I don't really have any major hands I want to talk about from day 2 because it was just pretty much, I bet, they call when I have it, they fold when I don't, and life is good. It was just, in a way, it's kind of boring to talk about. It's like, guess what, guys? I made another set. Yeah. Guess what? I bet three streets, and they kept calling.
I got aces, you know, again. You got paid off by queens.
Yeah. I mean, there was one interesting hand from day two that I discussed on another podcast, but the real message of that hand was I got bluffed on the – I had an overpair, and I bet it and got raised, and my opponent was Norwegian. So I called because we don't fold overpairs to Norwegians.
Yeah.
I think that is something you should all write down in all of your poker notebooks. And if you play online, put it on a sticky note on your computer. Never fold an overpair to a Norwegian opponent. It's just a bad play. So
you can throw Brazilians in that category too.
Yeah, I guess you could. Yeah. I mean, don't fold overpairs to Norwegians.
Yes.
Towards the end of day two, one other interesting thing is I have a guy that I've played against a bunch at Borgata. His name is Russ. I know he's a pro. He's a really good player. He's normally really aggressive, and he's just talented hand reader and just like someone you don't want to see at your table. I don't know Russ's last name, unfortunately, because I'd love for him to hear me saying nice things about him on the podcast if he's listening. But one adjustment that I noticed Russ made was he hardly ever three bet, and three betting pre-flop is a big part of his strategy from other tournaments I've played with him. But in this tournament, I felt like he wanted to a few times, especially when I was the one doing the raising and he's on my immediate left. Like if I raised my cutoff, he flatted me a lot on the button instead of three betting. And, you know, honestly, I think that sometimes people, they play so differently in the main event. And sometimes I think people take those adjustments too far. You know, the main event is a different animal, but at the end of the day, it's still a no limit hold'em tournament.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of a point I wanted to make that I've noticed Russ and a few other pros that I played against that I'd recognize changing their style pretty drastically because it's the main event.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would caution that we should all try to remember, like, yeah, you should make your adjustments that you think are correct, but like, let's still play poker. It's still a poker.
Yeah, don't sacrifice your edge in your game for because of this tournament. Yeah.
Yeah, because I had a much easier time with Russ on my left than I would have in any other tournament, in any other casino, at any other year. So, you know, if you never three bet me, then I feel like I can sort of take liberties, and I did. Yeah. I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So I finished day two with like almost 300K, which was awesome. Day three is to me the most interesting day of the main event because that's the day we reach the money and you start to get like bubble dynamics, and those are really fun. I realize now that my pocket aces hand that I mentioned on a previous podcast was a different opponent than the one I was just talking about at the other table. You guys have to forgive me a little bit because I played like 7 days straight and it was long days. There were two big hands I played in this tournament with pocket aces. They were not both against the player Bobby that check raised me with pocket sixes in the other hand.
Basically, there's so many dumb Bostonians running around the place you can't even really keep straight.
They just all blend together and look all at these white guys look the same. How do you tell them apart?
Look at this arrogant Manhattan right here. Thinks all the people from New England are stupid. But anyways.
Yeah. I definitely don't mean it that way, but I just want to see you know, how well everybody out there can remember all their hands if they play 7 days straight, 12-hour date. Wait, I lied. I did have one day off after day one because I didn't end up doing commentary. So I changed my whole schedule, and then they ended up changing their schedule, so they didn't need me for the 4th of July at all. So I could have played 1C, but that's water under the bridge. And I got 28th place, so we're not crying. All right, so towards the end of day three is when you start to reach the bubble, and a lot of the players at my table, which was probably the third table I was at that day, were very, very concerned about reaching the money. How many more players left? How many more tables left? When do we reach the money? Do you guys know if we reach the money before dinner? Do we reach it after dinner? They're all talking about the money.
Yeah.
And like, it's really important to them. So it's a huge dynamic that you don't usually find in tournaments, that not only are players like really sweating the bubble, but they're also openly talking about sweating the bubble. So,
and you're like, these guys may just fold like queens. just because they want to cash.
A few years ago when I had my deep run, I bluffed a guy off of a set on the bubble, and he turned it face up and showed me that he folded a set. He's like, I just don't want to go out like this.
Yeah.
With like five players before the money, he folded a set to me when I had, you know, very little.
Yeah.
So I tend to go pretty crazy on the bubble. The reason on this bubble I didn't go as crazy as usual was because my stack had peaked at this table, like almost 600,000, and a few things haven't gone my way lately, and my stack is all the way down to like 350,000. And I think when you have that kind of image, like you're losing, and maybe you're on tilt, it's a big mistake to try to pull off a whole bunch of bluffs.
Yeah.
So there was a really good player from Canada at my table. His name is Shanrazi Kuhn. I believe he also finished in the top 100, actually. And he was talking to the players who seemed to be concerned about the bubble, saying things like, you know, even with a hand like pocket aces, you could still go broke and then not make any money. And like, he was like openly campaigning for them to continue playing scared. Yes.
Yeah. I do the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to know when you do that same thing that the other professional players at the table are like fully aware of what you're up to. They're not,
of course,
fall for it. But, you know, if it works against the less experienced players, maybe the ones who free rolled or satellited in or won their little home game to get a chance to play in the main, whatever the case may be, those players are definitely susceptible to those kind of speech tactics or whatever. So I noticed that Shanrazi was abusing the bubble, for lack of a better word. And so in this hand, the blinds are 2,500 and 5,000 with a 500 ante, and we're about 20 or 25 spaces away from the bubble, which with this many tables, that could happen pretty fast. Like, we might hit the bubble in the next half hour easily. Okay. So, as I said, the big blind is 5,000. He's got like 300,000 behind. I have him barely covered. He opens to 13,000 from middle position. A really bad player on the button calls with 140,000. Now, this guy has been really loose passive pre-flop and then very tight post-flop. So he's been like, I call before the flop and then I fold on the flop, that kind of guy.
Okay.
So obviously that is not a winning strategy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's amazing. A terrible he's made it to day three.
Yeah. But he's, you know, his stack is certainly below average. It's 140. So he calls the 13,000. I'm in the small blind next to act with pocket jacks.
Ooh.
Yeah. So how do we want to play our jacks?
Interesting spot.
This is an interesting spot. I like this. Okay, and we have 350, you said, right?
Correct.
And do you remember what the big blind had?
The big blind had 200.
200, okay. Well, we have 70 big blinds, but the biggest deck has
a little less.
60.
60.
Yeah, he's got 60 bigs, so this is too much to man, it would be ideal to get man, I actually just put the pen down. A really bad player didn't open it.
So a really, really good player opened.
Yeah.
And then a really bad player called
on the button, and we're in the small blind with jacks. 60 bigs effective.
I love to hear – you can actually hear Steve's mind just grinding to a halt.
I know.
The two hamsters are running opposite directions right now.
Yeah, this is not good, Steve.
This is a slack-jawed fireman.
Drooling all over his notepad.
This thing's going to go crisp anyways.
Well, here's my thought. Okay. Folding's out of the question, obviously. Calling, I think, would be a mistake to – probably end up going four ways here because the big blind will probably come along as well. I don't know, more than half the time. Four way in the worst position with jacks, I think is bad. So I think we need to raise. The thing is, what the hell do we do if MP four bet. I guess we just fold. But are we really folding the fourth best hand in poker because of that? God. I'd make it 44.
Okay. 44K. Mike?
I think there's an argument for flatting too here.
Think so.
Not pump. It depends if you think he's capable of four bet full bluffing here or not.
Yeah.
Because if he is, I do think you have to fold to a four bet out of position.
Yeah.
Like I said, that would be the argument. But also, I don't think. Yeah, four ways. Jacks, I guess, doesn't play great. But I don't think you have to worry about getting bluffed off the best hand or anything that often.
Yeah,
I don't think the main villain here is necessarily going to be triple barreling off. I mean, you have them covered. That's pretty. Right. That's pretty relevant here.
Yeah, I do, and you know he's the one that's been making everybody else aware of the bubble. So, he's obviously aware of the bubble himself. Now he might not care as much about the $15,000 you get for the min cash as some of the other players at the table who are clearly, you know, praying for it.
Yeah.
But I don't think he would necessarily want to play a huge pot on the bubble. That said, he has been abusing this bubble, and he's an excellent player. He's been very aggressive, and I do think that he's capable of four bet bluffing.
Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of the times, and if you also, see these guys who are, like, you know, sort of the end of day one of tournament or bubble or whatever, who are just opening every hand and abusing the bubble and just stealing so many pots, or people are just calling two bets and folding the flop. They're smart enough where if he's got a crappy hand, he should be folding here. Right. There's no reason to get sticky here. Because you haven't been out of hand yet.
Right, and so, I've been losing. I showed up at this table with like 600,000. I've gone all the way down to 350. Right. So he might feel like I'm not a good player. But I think really good players can tell that just because you're losing doesn't mean you're bad at poker.
Right.
Yeah. You know
what I mean, there's a little bit of a dynamic, though. It's very hard to get respect when all you've done for the last hour since you sat here is like show up with a big stack and lose every pot.
Look at me, bitches.
Yeah, it's hard to get respect in that scenario.
Really, just to go, I'm having a hand that flashed in my mind, Steve. I don't know if I talked about Scott Stewart with this personally or if we talked in the podcast. Okay. I don't know if Clayton, you listened to Scott Stewart, was like came in 14th in the main event last year or something. And he's an LA pro, he's an absolute stud, a bunch of rings and everything like that. And I think this might have been against Chris Moorman, but Moorman or somebody opened like early position. He had queens in the small blind. He just called and then folded on a king high flop.
Right.
Just you're just staying away from playing the best players out of position.
Right.
Yeah.
At all. You know what I mean? So this would be a pretty good example where you could flat. It's a small investment and see what happens on the flop. So that's kind of what I'm leaning towards here.
All right. I see the merit in that. I see the merit in flatting. You probably end up checking and folding a lot, maybe sometimes with the best hand, but you know, at least you don't have to play a big pot like right on the bubble of the main event, yada yada. However, well rested Clayton does not like to play passively with the fourth best hand against an opponent who he thinks has been overly aggressive. So well rested Clayton three bet it to 40,000, planning to shove to any four bet.
Okay.
So I think that Shan Rossi is aggressive enough and was, you know, making such a point of abusing the bubble enough that I think losing 60 of my 70, whatever big blinds, to a player that happens to pick up a huge hand right when he needs one, right when his image is perfect. I mean, I don't have a problem with getting it in with him.
Okay.
So,
well, you said don't fold the Swedes. I'm kind of feeling like anyone whose name's Shan Rossi. I don't know. Is that, I don't know his ethnicity.
But maybe Indian, it feels, or Pakistani, yeah. something like
okay.
that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But he's Canadian. But you know, the name is definitely like maybe Middle Eastern or South Asian. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but more free betting here. You're obviously so far ahead of his opening range. If he's range.
Him making it like 110 here and then folding to your shove. You think?
Oh yeah,
he could do this
shove
with like ace five of clubs or something, or 8-9 of diamonds.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Actually,
I like it.
Ace five of clubs is the popular hand to do it with now, because somebody wrote somewhere that you're never more than 30%. You're never worse than 30% except against aces when you have the ace five suited.
Oh. Okay.
So a lot
and
of
and he probably would be an interesting spot. Technically, he's probably supposed to fold, regardless if he's a pro or not. You know, for ICM, I don't know. I don't know if he'd five bet fold to queens, but if he would five bet fold if he would four bet fold queens, you're probably supposed to though. But if you five bet shove here, it certainly looks like Kings, aces, or ace king suited, you know. But
queens is not beating anything. I'm probably, in his mind, I'm not playing jacks this way.
Right.
So if he raises and I re-raise, and maybe ICM would tell him to flat his queens.
Yeah.
To my three bet. So I don't know. There's definitely some interesting dynamics between him and me in this pot. So he thinks about it. He stares at me. He looks angry that someone took away his mojo, and he really wanted to play a pot with that fish who called the pot.
Sure.
but he ends up folding his hand, and only the inexperienced player with the shorter stack called me. So I think this is a great result.
The best thing that could have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, aside from everyone folding, I guess, but yeah.
I'm going to play an inflated pot against a player who doesn't know what he's doing, and I almost definitely have the best hand.
Yeah.
All he's done is call twice. So, right, I mean, he called. The one guy's raised, and I re-raised, and he called again. So I think in that scenario, jacks are probably the nuts. Right?
I think that's an accurate assessment, yes.
Yeah, and then on top of everything else, the flop is 7-4 deuce rainbow. So what else do I want, you know?
Yeah.
This guy's only got like 95,000 left in his stack. Whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say he's only got 100K behind or something. So
yeah, and that's like how much is in the pot. But yeah. I got cute. I bet 40,000. I mean, I think checking is fine. I think betting all of it is fine. I just got cute and bet small. I bet the same amount I had raised it to. You know, I love my hand. I want action, whatever. He goes all in for 95,000 total. Perfect. So I think it's a trivial, easy call. I like snap call. And he says, uh-oh, do you have aces?
Oh, no.
And at that point, I knew my hand was no good. So he turns over kings.
Wow.
Yeah, and he played his kings that way. Just call and then call.
Wow.
And then finally show some aggression on the 7-high flop. But this is how some inexperienced players play the bubble of the main event. He's worried that one of us had aces. And even when he gets it in on a 7-high flop, he's like knit rolling me, like worried about his kings not being any good.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a kind of a frustrating hand because, I mean, I didn't lose that many chips on it. I guess I lost like, you know, 130.
But if he played his hand properly, if he three bet it, you probably don't four bet or flat against this particular
right.
guy, because the way he's been, he's so flat.
Yeah.
He's got queens plus in that spot.
Yeah,
so
he just has to have it.
You know what? Actually, jacks is a really easy fold if this guy is aggressive at all before the flop.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was just kind of an unfortunate hand or whatever. However, a few things went my way right after that, and I got my stack all the way back up to 340. And then I played a couple of really interesting pots that I just want to talk through because we're kind of getting short on time.
Sure.
But I just want to talk a little bit about the bubble dynamics. Basically, there were 7 players at my table folding everything and 2 players at my table that were actually trying to make some money on the bubble. Me and Shen Rossi Kun.
Okay.
In middle position, I opened pocket sixes, and this is like maybe like eight players to the bubble. And now he's down to like 260, and I have about 340. And he raised it to 40K from the small blind. And it folded back to me. And in almost any other tournament situation on earth, I'm either calling or folding my sixes. But because we're on the bubble of the main event, and because I still feel like he's trying to establish a foothold, I decide to four bet it. And I made it 90,000, planning to fold if he shoved, which is something I would never do, except that it's the bubble. And because I've already built up all of this, like,
yeah, you
know, character equity against this guy. So he folds his hand. And I'm like, nice. Finally, I get a leg up on him. Later, the same guy, a few hands later, he raised in late position. And I picked up ace four off in the small blind and three bet it. And he folded. And when he folded, he said, "Aren't you scared?" You know, he's like, "We're almost at the bubble. Aren't you scared?" And I said, "I don't care about $15,000. Do you?" Which, by the way, is not true at all. If anyone knows how much money comedians make, there's no truth to that. But I wanted him to know that I'm not scared. And my play reflected it, and my table talk reflected it. So.
Send his deadbeat ass back to Canada.
Yeah.
Exactly. Go fucking drink a Löwenbräu and bang an Eskimo, you punk.
Yeah, get out of here.
I don't know if they have either of those things in Canada, but it's just
Molsons. They got a lot of Molsons.
Oh yeah, yeah. Molson or Labatt's, yeah. Yeah. So he was getting frustrated, and he was trying to talk to me about, you know, aren't you worried about the bubble? Look, you know, first of all, it's not my first main event. Second of all, it's not my first cash. And third of all, I'm not going to like change the way I play bubbles. Look, guys, I bubble more than anybody you ever have on your podcast. I tend to go crazy and spaz with like pocket sixes or try to get people to fold sets. You know, I do shit on the main event on the main event bubble, especially, that you would never do. But I'll do these kind of things in other tournament bubbles because I just find that most players, they read so many articles and watch so many videos about ICM. That they're folding way too much. And this is like the number one opportunity to make money in the main event is on the bubble. So I wasn't going to let the fact that one player at my table seemed to know what he was doing stop me. He did win one hand against me right before the bubble where I had flatted his open. I was on the button with a 9-8 suited. And I flopped middle pair and he bet big and I just folded it. Which I thought was interesting. It came like queen, and it was king, nine, deuce, and I had the 9-8 suited, and he bet big, and he kind of looked like he wanted me to play with him, like he'd finally gotten in a spot against me.
Yeah.
And I don't normally fold middle pair when, you know, if you call with 9-8 and you get a little something on the flop, you're usually supposed to at least peel one.
Yeah.
But in this particular situation, I opted to just throw it away. We were almost on the bubble, and it just seemed like my spidey sense or whatever was telling me, like, no, he's got you this time, Clayton. Get out of there.
Yeah, yeah. He has a king. Just let it go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I just felt like he had it there, so I just decided to let it go. Now, before we go, I have one more hand that I actually want to talk through with you guys rather than just narrate.
Okay.
You know, my other thing can wait a few minutes because this one is just so worth it. There's that big hand that everybody saw.
Really building this up here, Clayton? Okay.
No, this is a good hand. I wouldn't tell you guys. You guys are going to like this hand a lot.
Okay. Now, no results. Don't give us any clues as to what, you know, who's folding or any of that.
No, nothing like that.
Okay.
It's just a really interesting poker hand. Now, we're well deep into the bubble on day six. I mean, into the money on day six. We have just recently won a really large pot that's shown on television with the ace king against pocket tens where I talk him into it. That's like, I think that's going to be a pretty famous hand from this year's main event. I think we may have discussed it briefly last time, but anyway, there was a guy that was kind of like talking to me a lot and trying to figure out if his tens were any good on ace, ace four. And I had ace king.
Okay.
He basically doubled up. So that happened recently. And now we have the ace of diamonds, queen of spades in the hijack. The blinds are 40K, 80K with 10,000 ante.
Oh, that's a big ante.
And we have like 12 million.
Okay.
40K, 80K.
So it folds to us in the hijack. Okay. Yeah.
You've got 150 bigs here. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, we have a stack.
Okay.
So folds to me in the hijack with the ace of diamonds, queen of spades. Okay. And I opened to 200.
Okay.
Which was kind of the standard bet at my table. Some guys were doing 190, 200 seemed right. The button, Bas de Lot, who is a professional player from Holland, who has mostly been uninvolved at this table as the chips have been flying at this table, and he seems like he's been waiting for a spot. But I know Bas. I know he's an excellent tournament player, and I'm not happy that he's the one who called me. I also got action from Bart Liebert, who's from, I want to say, Belgium. I could be wrong, but they're both European pros. So the only good news so far is that I have ace queen, which is a good hand.
Okay.
Everything else about this sucks.
Okay. Now, where was the other player that called? Small blind or big blind?
The big blind. The big okay. blind.
So he yeah. called the 200 small blind folded.
Yeah. So it's me, Bass, and Bart to the flop.
Okay. It looks like we like, got 600 and
call it 700. Yeah.
700 like about, maybe with the antes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's about seven in there. So, flop okay. comes jack of diamonds, nine of spades, eight of diamonds, and Bart checks to me.
Ace of diamonds, queen of spades, on a jack of diamonds, nine of spades, eight of diamonds. Okay, we got a backdoor right. so, flush draw. We got a gut shot.
We have two over cards two for overs, what it's worth.
Yeah. I'm probably checking here. What are you doing, Mikey?
I don't know. You know, funny thing is, I was just thinking this is a spot where lately in like cash games, I'm either giving up or check raising, actually.
Oh.
Just because if I bet and they call like double barrel, if it's decent against a lot of opponents, it's just not going to make a lot of sense. They're not folding a pair. Basically, they'll fold jack X to a check raise here and put you on it. But this is me talking about mediocre players on 2-5, not yeah. two top European pros.
Yeah. yeah.
yeah. I'm sorry. Do you have a backdoor flush?
I do. Yeah.
He's got the ace of diamonds, so he's got the backdoor nut flush. I don't know. I just looking at this in a vacuum, I feel like this flop just hits their range a lot better than it does ours because they just flatted. I don't know. I think I'm just checking here. And if
this is like the wettest, this is the wettest board like ever.
Yeah.
It hits everybody's range yeah. ever. Like it always hits all the ranges in the world. So, I feel like there's no reason to bet. Although I love the check raise idea because, you know, what do you do with queen jack? If I check and you bet and then I raise real big,
yeah.
Now, but I should mention my opponents don't have anywhere near the stack I do. They're both around 6 million.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to ask effective stacks. Okay.
Yeah, I forgot to mention it as well. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, I'm like second in chips in the whole tournament.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the check raise is – but just quickly with cash, I've been thinking, Steve, usually cash, your check raising, your sets, and then your big draws just to balance. Where yeah, I've been looking for some other spots for that. Like this would be an example, but
I was just going to add to that.
Steve, you like to check, Steve, but would you check call here?
Depending on sizing, I mean, there's 700 in the pot. If they bet like 150 or something, then I'm not folding. I'd probably cut it off at like if they went any more than 2.5. If they went more than 250, I'm probably folding.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. I think that check raising is fine too because you could pick up You could make a straight on the turn. You could also make a pair of aces, which might be good on the turn. You could also pick up the nut flush draw on the turn. So if you do check raise, you have a lot of cards you can continue on. And you don't, just because you check raise doesn't mean you have to bet again on the turn. I really like that play. And I think that, you know, Boss on the button is more than capable of betting just because we both checked to him. Even if he just has a small piece, something like 8-7 suited or something,
yeah,
he will probably bet because we check.
And you do have, you can say it smashes all your everyone's range, but you're much more likely to have a set than the other players here, I think, because you are going to squeeze sometimes with eights and nines and raise with jacks a lot. So,
yeah, I agree with that.
So Steve, Steve would check, probably give up, and Clayton, what did you decide to do here?
Yeah, so I bet 290. For the same reasons I like the check raise, I like just continuing to be the aggressor in this pot, because if I don't get raised, there are so many cards on the turn that I can continue betting and put a lot of pressure on one pair of hands like ace nine or 10-9. You know, that if I want to just keep firing, I could probably get some of those hands out.
Right.
I don't really like my play that much now. I think check raising is better. But that's what I did in the moment. And I think that I set a decent price, not a great price, but you know, 290 into 700, it's a pretty good price for me to try to hit another card on the turn. If I get called, I will take it down sometimes, of course. Like when they both have small pairs or 8-7 and don't want to continue, whatever. So anyway, they both called this time. So now we have a big ass pot here.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's like 16. There's 1.6 million in the middle. And the turn is the ace of spades. So now we have two spades and two diamonds on the board. And I have top pair plus a gut shot straight draw.
So we got the ace of diamonds, queen of spades, and the board is now jack of diamonds, nine of spades, eight of diamonds, and the turn was the ace of spades.
Ace,
so we got
ace of spades.
Ace of spades. So we got top pair with a good kicker. How much did you say was in the middle? I didn't add it up.
It was 700 plus 900. So it's like 1.6 million in there.
Okay.
Yeah. And the first guy checks to me, so it's on me now.
Big blind checks. I'm probably checking. We got.
Okay.
We can't. What are we going to get called by if we? That's worse than us if we bet here. Well, we'll get called by probably like 9-10. Okay, so we'll get called by some of those draws. Maybe this is a bet.
There's a ton of hands that can call us if we bet again.
Yeah, yeah. Jack 10, 9 10, 8 10.
Any two diamonds.
Ace 10.
Yeah. Diamond draws.
Any two diamonds. Now, if somehow they got there in the turn with two spades, like they had Jack X of spades, then that would make sense.
Now they have a flush draw with the spades as well. I didn't even think of that at first, but yeah.
Okay, so I feel like. Yeah, okay. All right. And the 1.6.
There is value in betting. There's also value in checking.
I'm going to go into 1.6. I'm debating between like 5 to 7. I'll just throw it in the middle. I'll bet 600.
Is that okay with you, Mike?
Yeah. I'm still trying to think about the checking here versus because the ace could help their range too. Obviously, they could have some two pair combos. Yep. I'm just wondering what I do if I get raised here with the ace. But checking puts you in a tough spot too. Sorry to take it back, because these GTO Euros, if you check, you're obviously checking back ace king or ace queen. They're going to put you on that a lot, and they're not just going to take a stab on it. They're going to bet here and shove river, you know.
Right. Exactly.
So. I think betting, you know, you can get called by worse for sure. There's a strong argument for that. I think that's probably the you know, you're betting for value here, sure.
So you're betting, Mike, or you're checking? What are you doing?
I guess betting. I'm thinking of absolutely bombing it here, though.
Oh,
okay.
It takes away. It's going to make it pretty hard for them to bluff you off the hand. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with folding them off their equity here either.
True. Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of chips. There's a lot of chips out there. So, yeah. I mean, I'm sorry. How many chips are in the pot right now?
1.6 million.
I mean, I'm thinking like 1.25 million, 1.4 million. I'm thinking of betting big here. I think I'm either checking or bombing it.
All right.
I don't know why. I just throw shit out there. I never know the answer to any of this shit. If you want good advice, go to Brokus and Mavis here, for God's sakes, man.
I'm trying to think, like, if we bet 1.6 here, like, what's a guy doing with Jack 10?
I think most players are calling.
I think so. Now, what about 9, 10?
Yeah, I think they're calling with any pair in straight draw.
Okay.
I don't know if they should, but I think most guys do.
We have the stack edge, but these, not like these guys started the hand shallow. They each had like 75 bigs to start the hand. So
yeah, they're both around 6 million. So I made it 550. I just bet 550. I was planning to fold to a raise. I'm worried about queen 10. I'm worried about sets. Although I kind of agree with Mike that I have more sets than they do. I'm worried about two pair hands like ace jack, ace nine.
I think sets are probably raising on the flop most of the time.
Not always, though. These Euros can do – they mix it up. They're GTO, like Mike said. These guys, you can't really rule it out. I agree that they will raise sometimes because it's such a wet board, but these guys are more than capable of, like, flopping a set and waiting till the turn.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. So only – Bastelot from the Netherlands called.
So that was the button, the big blind?
Folded, correct.
That's the button.
Button, okay.
Yeah. So now we have 2.7 million in the middle. And my opponent has about 5 million behind.
Okay.
The river is the four of clubs. And I'm first to act. I still just have one pair. I shouldn't say just, but I have top pair with a queen kicker.
Hmm. What do we look like from his perspective?
Oh, I should mention that my opponent didn't like snap call on the flop. He took about a minute to a minute and a half to call, and the other guy folded instantly. Yeah, so I don't know how much we want to read into that.
Oh,
but
you mean on the turn?
I meant on the turn.
Okay, on the turn. All right.
Yeah, I don't know what I said, but I meant the turn.
Okay.
I think this is a clear bet fold spot, although, again, these Euros are capable of shoving here. You don't really want to bet fold against top players, I think is normally a rule. But in this spot, I don't know how frequently they're shoving over you as a bluff, if that's what your concern is, if you'd rather check call. But I think you can bet for value here. Do they get sticky with Jack X? I don't know. If you're betting, I guess you're betting small here, right?
Yeah, I guess if you're betting here,
or do you bet big, make it look like a bluff, and just kind of, I mean, they do have some aces in their range too. Not, I guess only ace 10 would be in their range, right?
That's the only one I can come up
unless
with.
Unless they had ace X of diamonds, you know, somehow.
Oh, no, you got the diamond. And they can't have ace X of spades because the ace of spades is out there. So I was trying to think, if we check here, then does he fire a naked 10? But there really aren't any naked 10s in his range except for king 10 and ace 10, which is probably going to check back anyhow, and we don't get value from that. I think you're right, man. Mike, I was thinking, like, can we really go three streets here with a one pair hand? But I think we can, like, just squeak out a little value here from maybe if he's sticky with the jack or if he hit the ace as well.
So you guys want to bet?
Yeah, I kind of do. I think it's bet fold. And I don't know. What's your impression of this guy? Like, is he just
checking,
like, jamming rivers as a bluff, you think, or?
As I mentioned, I haven't seen him do anything quite like that at this table. My table's been really wild. The chips are flying.
Okay.
And I've had the impression that he's been kind of waiting to pick his spot. I'm not sure if he's going to take this spot, like, as a time to just put in 5 million.
Although, like I said, it's a bad, if you check here, it is a bad board for him to bluff at. So that's what I'm just thinking. If we're trying to bluff catch, and hoping he takes a shot at it, it looks like you've got a pair for sure.
Let me add something to the mix here.
Okay.
I feel like my opponent, if he has a 10, something like 10-9, Jack 10, those type of hands, a pair and a straight draw. I think he's very good at poker and capable of recognizing that his hand is probably no good, and that if he wants to win this pot, he's going to need to bluff with it. I don't know if he would necessarily do that if I bet, but I feel like that's part of his strategy when I check. And so if I check, I kind of need to be ready to, you know, bluff catch with my pair of aces.
Yeah, so, a check call is good then. If you think he's got some bluffs in his range there.
Think that he'll turn Jack 10 into a bluff?
I think that he will sometimes do that, you know, recognizing that there's a good chance
Jack 10 is good. Or 8-10 or 9-10 or, yeah, okay.
Yeah, because I bet twice already.
Yeah.
And I know if he just has like a naked flush draw, something like, let's say, like 5-4 of diamonds, you know, just kind of come up with one. Yeah. Okay. A meaningless pair of fours on the river, four clubs.
Yeah.
He would almost certainly turn those hands into a bluff some of the time, because he clearly knows that he doesn't have enough showdown value if he made like a pair of fours or something like that with like any two diamonds, I think would probably. But the problem is I have the ace of diamonds, so a lot of his diamond hands are out of his range because I have one of the cards.
That's what I keep running through right here. I'm like, oh, he could have king, queen of spades. That would oh, no, we have the queen of spades. And then I come up with all these diamond. Oh, we have the ace of diamonds. So,
We have blockers to a lot of his bluffs. So
you know what? You might be right. Maybe this is a check, and then you just have to accept that you just got a call, and it's going to suck.
Yeah.
He has no other option than to bluff at it. I don't think you have any other option than to call.
I think I would check and call pretty cheerfully. Like, I think ace queen is good enough. If he makes a normal bet, like half the pot, I think I'm pretty happy to call.
It's pretty easy call.
Yeah. I mean, I'm picturing him potting it or even going bigger, then that would suck. But
okay. Yeah. It does suck. Cause that's what happens. I check and he shoves.
Oh God.
But first, he tanks for over 2 minutes, and I called the clock.
You called the clock?
So, and I've been doing that a lot. If you watched any of the coverage, like, I'm a clock caller. Like, I'm going to try to take away the stigma of calling the clock. I've been complaining openly about how slow my table is getting. And this guy, he already tanked for like a minute to a minute and a half on the turn. And now you're freaking tanking again? Like, make a move.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. I didn't do it in a rude way. I just said, I said, I mean, I think you've been thinking about this long enough. Clock, please. And as soon as I said that, he moved all in.
I was just going to ask that, actually. I was going to say, is he ever just flatting the nuts on the turn? Or is he always raising at that point Jack's a set and a straight?
You know, this guy's an excellent player. I think he's balanced, and that I wouldn't apply always to anything.
Right. That would be the standard, though, is to just not jump into action there with a monster hand on the turn. So help me with the pot size here matters, Steve. Sorry, this time.
2.7 in the middle, and he has he's got like 5 mil, right? So he overbet it by 2x.
He's bet almost twice the pot.
Okay, that means that our hand has to be good 66% of the time if he bet twice the pot.
That's correct.
Don't know that it is. Are we good here 2/3 of the time? He insta-shoved.
Would he play a straight this way? Would he, if he had a monster, would he play it this way though? I would think he'd be going for value there a lot.
See, that's the thing.
But you know, maybe he's ranging you very well. He's putting you on ace king or ace queen, and he wants the bet to look really polarized with all the misdraws out there. Would you do this with two pair?
What? I don't think he would do this with two pair.
What was his demeanor like? You know, we talked before about how was your Spidey sets. Did you feel nutted, or are you just getting nothing?
I got nothing.
You got nothing. Okay.
I was shocked by the bet. I thought his decision was between trying to bluff with his missed draw or checking back one pair and seeing if it was good. Yeah. I didn't think shoving was going to happen. I didn't feel like he had a shoving range. I was shocked when he did it. And then I took a little tank of my own.
Yeah.
The guy who's been calling the clock on everybody. I think this was the longest tank of my whole career, to be honest. Trying to figure out what the hell to do here.
God, I could see myself doing either way. I think in the end, I probably just fold and be like, you know, nice bluff, sir. You got me. But I don't know. It just feels like two pair are better. Or like he turned 10-8 into a bluff, you know, or the missed diamond draw, like you were saying. I
don't think he does this with two pair. I think he does this with the nuts. I think he does this with queen 10 or nothing. Yeah, it felt really polarized to me. It just doesn't seem like the right bet size for two pair.
Yeah, you might be right.
Well, if that's your read, I think he – I don't know, man. I just think he raises – he probably playing a mixed strategy. So the queen 10 on the turn, he's probably flatting sometimes. But he's got to be raising a lot.
80%. It's hard for him to have queen 10 as well because I have 80, a queen.
Yeah, he's got 80 combos in it.
Yeah, 80% plus of the time, I think he's raising the queen 10 there.
I disagree with that, by the way. Just –
You do. Okay.
Yeah, I think he's balanced. I don't think it's 80%. I think that sometimes he's just going to, you know, hope that I bet the river, you know, so he can get more value or whatever. I think especially with the ace on the turn, like if I don't have an ace and I bet 550, he doesn't want to raise that bet. He doesn't want to let me get away easy. He just calls. After a long tank, maybe with the nuts, calls.
Well, I don't. Yeah, I'm not a great student of GTO, but I'd still consider 80%, 20% to be balanced on a certain level because you're not always raising the nuts. But I don't know, man. that's pricey.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, Clayton. Do you think that he's almost always turning 10-8 and 9-8 into a bluff? Or do you think he's checking those back to see if his pair is good?
I think
that would be two pair. 9-8, right? Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. 9-10 and 8-10.
Yeah. I mean, we think he has a 10 a lot. So I think that his tank on the river is often going to be with those kind of hands. Like,
yeah,
you know, I've got, should I bluff this or is my hand good enough to show down? I don't know. There's maybe I should bluff it or maybe I should show it down. Like, I think when he tanks the river like that, but there's also the part of me that's like, well, does he realize that I seem to get annoyed when people take a long time? So he's not going to shove the nuts until I finally call the clock on him.
And yeah, that did, was interesting that he shoved as soon as you called the clock.
Immediately, yeah.
No Has more he waiting. Seen you call the clock on other players so far?
I probably called three in the last 2 hours.
Oh, Jesus, yeah, okay.
And I've done it in a nice way. I'm smiley. I've been happy. You know, I've been joking around with everybody.
But he knows, he knows if he waits long enough, you're going to call it.
Yeah, so he's waiting to spring the trap or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you were there live. If it's queen 10 or he's turning jack x into a bluff, or if it's a bluff, I think it's probably a call. Like my first thing was, well, I'd be worried that he could have a set. He could have two pair. He could have ace king somehow and be kind of merging that maybe to get your fold two pair or two. So I put a lot more hands that beat you in his range. It sounds like you only have one, which you also block, in which you agree he's going to be raising at least 50% on the turn. So in that case, it is a call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I guess I should amend my range. It just felt like polarized, not necessarily the nuts or nothing, but I felt like it was polarized in the sense that it didn't feel like two pair or ace king. It felt like he either has a really, really strong hand that he's sure is good, or he has some other hand that he's pretty sure isn't good. You know, okay, like bottom pair with a 10, like 10-8. Yeah. So I shouldn't have said it's always either the absolute stone cold nuts or nothing. But it didn't feel like he had any of those middle hands. Like, it's not 9-8, you know. It's not like some weird two pair, like Jack 9. It's just not.
Ace Jack.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. All right. I think it's called in. Because we got 12 combos of 8-10, 12 combos of King 10, 12 combos of 9-10. He's possibly even doing that with Jack 10 because he doesn't think Jack 10's good anymore. Then we got even more, which would put us ahead of the 66% that we needed. So, yeah. I guess I flick in a call.
Yeah. I couldn't flick in anything, man. I thought I tanked for over 2 minutes and folded. And I'm really, 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 really hoping that ESPN shows this one.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see what he had.
Now, this hand was not at a featured table, but before the dealer mucked his dead hand, after I folded my hand, the dealer killed my hand before the camera crew could stop him. But the director stopped the dealer. Wait, and only ESPN took a peek at those two cards.
Okay.
So they know what he had, and they asked me what I had.
Yeah.
So it might depend whether they believe me or they want to show a hand where they can't confirm that I'm telling the truth.
Yeah.
But it was a really interesting pot, especially with all the clock calling dynamics going on. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't like the enemy at the table. Like most people kind of agreed, like the table was getting slow. But I think they kind of like in this spot, he may have leveraged my desire to keep the game moving against me a little bit. Or just for dramatic.
The fact that you also bet small on the turn maybe keeps a few more bluffs in his range because he should be really strong there. Even some of the 10x he should be folding. So at that point it should be like straights and I don't know. My first instinct was bet fold the river, but I didn't I'm like I don't know how that changes this. If he's, that doesn't mean he's not capable of shoving it over you, which makes it even a tougher spot because you've got more chips in there, and his range
is even stronger. Bigger pot when I fold.
But you know, 5 million chips is 5 million chips deep in the main event. I mean, that's fucking 60 bigs, right, or something. So
yeah,
I'll be honest, guys, I lost a little sleep over this one.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like at that point, it's like it might not even be counting hand combos. It might be okay if you're bluffing, bud. Good deal.
Yeah. I mean, you just risked your whole tournament against the chip leader.
Yeah.
I'm second in chips in this whole room now, and he's shoving on me. So I don't think guys do that a lot.
Yeah, and this is a good reason against good players why you gotta check some rivers with big hands too.
Yeah.
You gotta balance yourself in those spots. Otherwise you just get owned here when you're in check.
I pretty much never have Queen 10. And he knows it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, God damn it, man. I really was hoping this was a TV hand that I missed because I want to know what the fucking guy has.
I know, so do I.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they had the Clayton camera on me all day. And when this pot started getting big, the whole crew came around, the microphones and everything. You know, they heard me call the clock. They saw me, like, tanking. Like, they, you know, they have the footage.
Yeah.
It's just a question of if they use it or not. But I'm dying to know what he had.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I do have to run, guys. I'm already late. I'm already late for something, but I wanted to discuss that hand because I haven't talked about that one on any other show, and I'm not even sure it's going to make TV.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Clayton. This was awesome. This was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. I really love talking to you guys about the hands, and you know, you're no help. I mean, you guys don't give me any good advice, but it's still fun.
That's great.
It's still fun to do. You know, it's,
yeah.
You know, basically, yeah.
I just listen to bad advice for an hour and a half and then go on about my day. It's great.
Tell Four Eyes to get to the back of the bus. He's no longer the 18th here, man.
That's great.
Love you guys. Thanks for having me on again. Appreciate it.
Right on. Thank you, Clayton. And you guys can follow Clayton at Clayton Comic on Twitter. Check out his show at Broadway Comedy Club. You can follow Mike at Mike Snyderman on Twitter and me at HUP Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. And here is your weekly motivational speech.
You know what I hear? I hear the clock ticking. Time waits for no man. Life goes by, and it goes by quick. Don't waste those years. Don't waste them. Live them. Back off? Negative. Not happening. In fact, I'm stepping it up. No complacency. No complacency. No backing off. No slack whatsoever. Bring it. Fight. Fight that ticking clock with everything you got. And the earlier you get in the game and get on track, the better life you're going to have. Healthier, wealthier, stronger, smarter, better. Go through the motions. I don't really want to work out. I work out. Don't really want to get up and get out of bed. I get up and get out of bed. Don't give in to the immediate gratification that is whispering in your ear. The desire to take the path of least resistance, the downhill path, the easy path. Shut that down. Do not listen to that little voice. Instead, go through the motions. Lift the weights, sprint the hill, get out of bed, get things done. And by simply going through the motions, you stayed on the righteous path, the disciplined path, which is right where you know that you belong.
If you grind on Monday, and you grind on Tuesday, and you grind on Wednesday, but you chill on Thursday, and you chill on Friday, and they grind on Thursday, and they grind on Friday, sooner or later they gonna catch you. I told every kid in America that tell me they coming for me, you gonna work hard for it. Cause I'm gonna find out what the benchmarks are, I'm gonna reach the benchmarks, and I'm gonna excel that thing. You will not outwork me! I'm going to grind. I'm going to fight. I'm going to work. I'm going to press toward. I'm going to do everything in my power every single day to become a victor and not a victim.
This is the part where life demands that you make a vow, come hell or high water, that you're willing to pay the price, where you earn your spot with effort, with sweat, with blood, with tears. It's time to test your will, your endurance, your heart, to test your limits.